So welcome everyone. In the tradition, teachings of all sorts are often likened to the word is Dharma rain. The Dharma, the teachings are like rain. And we know that rain is an essential need and nurture of growth in all plants. It is an essential nutriment for plants to grow, the rain, as well as human beings, etc. But for plants, many types of plants, to benefit from rain, the soil has to let the rain go below the surface so it gets to the roots. Right? If you have a hard-packed soil, or some kind of obstruction, there can be lots of rain, but it won't get into the soil and the plants will not be nurtured, the roots will not be nurtured, and therefore the plant will not grow. So, what that means in terms of Dharma, teachings and practice, it means that the teachings, which can be the teachings like which we are receiving today. This is a kind of Dharma rain when we read Dharma texts, listen to other Dharma teachings, etc. We want the Dharma rain to go in deep so it can really nurture and support our healing and transformation. Many of us do not allow that to happen. So that is why, even though we may be expose ourselves to lots of teachings, read a lot, we wonder why it doesn't seem to take deeply, and why our habit patterns continue unabated. And again, there's several things we could say, but in terms of maintaining the Dharma rain analogy metaphor, it means we're not letting it really go in. We stop it. It stops here. It stops here because we don't reflect, which is our way of digesting. We don't reflect deeply on it. Or two, we stop it with our own stuff. We don't let the truths to go in deeply below the thinking mind, below the self-driven mind, to get into a deeper place within ourselves. That place which is yearning for liberation, yearning for freedom, yearning for happiness, yearning for peace. If we always process everything through that which is actually the cause of our unhappiness, or the cause of our stress, or the cause of our endless distractibility, or whatever, if that's the place that everything is processed, then it will always turn it around and it'll never get down deep. Again, we want it to get down deep because we know that the causation is deeply rooted within us, as well as our aspiration for freedom, for liberation, for happiness. For true meaning and value in life is also deep. So you want the rain to get into that place and those places within us and then it just happens. You know, plants don't think. Did you know that? Plants don't think, and yet they have an incredible capacity if they are given the proper nutriments, rain, good soil, sunlight, right? To grow quite wonderfully, and to grow quite uniquely, individually, right? Every plant and flower manifests in its own unique way, according to its own causes and conditions, its own seeds, its own DNA, right? So you might not believe it, but each of us is also the same. We need to get out of the way. You know, many people, that's a common expression, I got to get out of my own way. We got to get out of our own way. There is something more profound, more magical happening within each of us in this life. But we keep it clamped down. We keep it clamped down because we live in superficiality, meaning we just live on the surface of life, and we live on the surface really of our own life, consumed with endless comings and goings of the self, and the dramas of life, and the comings and goings of everybody else, without really looking deeply, penetrating deeply into our very core, where we can very readily discover really who we are and what this life is about, and also why we don't live in accordance with our deepest felt sense of the true meaning and purpose in life. And again, how can I make such an outrageous statement that everybody has this capacity and this yearning within them? Because we all have the same nature. We all have the same Buddha nature. We have the same unconditioned nature, which lives in a very different universe of experience than the universe of I, me, mine, self. That's a very narrow, constricted universe. And because we have this wonderful true nature, each and every one of us, a true nature that senses its expansive, open, interconnected nature, it's always yearning to get out. Right? You know, just like our dogs, they want to get out. You know, take me for a walk. I want to get out there. Sniff, pee, and run about, you know, just have a great old time. Our nature wants to be free, but we keep it bottled up. We check everything out. We repress, we oppress, we calculate, we manipulate, we live in fear, we live in narrowness. Right? So our true nature stays locked in the house, looking out the window. Right? Sometimes when I walk, lots of times you go by houses and you hear a barking, and you look and you see a dog in the window. It wants to get out. Rescue me, it says. I want to be free. I want to run about. We have that nature that wants to be free. Free of all constriction, free of all narrowness, free of self-consciousness, free of endless calculation. Right. Wants to be free, be happy, be at ease, be fearless, be comfortable. And so that's what that's why we practice. And so Dharma are those teachings that speak directly to that desire for liberation. There are many, many, many books out there. And there are many, 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 many types of schools of psychology and philosophy and self-improvement. And there's, as well, a million and one things that we can do with our time. But very few speak directly to this most central yearning for true happiness in life. And so that is why when we are in the presence of Dharma rain of any type, it is good that we pay attention and listen deeply and let it sink in. Right. We want our soil, our mind soil, to be a very good soil. Not hard packed. So the rain of Dharma can just flow in. Flow in so it can nurture all those parts of us that seek healing and transformation. Any questions about that? Yes.
You mean then that when listening to a Dharma talk or reading the Dharma that we shouldn't use our thinking mind to reflect on it and see how it applies to our life? Or I guess I'm not sure practically.
Yeah. Again, I think when you're listening to a Dharma talk, one should just listen to it because it's happening. And if you stop and think about it, you're missing the next thing that's happening. So I think when it's live, it's a direct encounter, and so one should be just like, you know, like when we're talking to anybody. I mean, you know, we shouldn't, you know, if I'm talking to you, hopefully I'm giving 100% to listening to you. I am not thinking about something else, past or future, nor am I thinking about you, or now am I, you know, it should be very 100% open and free. So I think when there's that kind of interchange, I think it should be totally 100% open. Okay. I think the reflection comes at other times. Right. And the reflection, it depends really where you're at in your practice. If you are at the process where you are, more encountering Buddhism, its teachings, mindfulness, reading, then you may want to be thinking more about it. And that's fine. But I think as if one is kind of moved beyond that and has decided, oh, this is a practical path, this is a coherent path, this is a path with integrity, you know, something I can trust and follow, then I think when one is exposed to teachings, the reflection is really, you know, what is my understanding of this? And most importantly, what is my understanding of this in relationship to my life and my life? Right? How am I going to, live my life differently? Because I reflected on this teaching and I believe it's true. So then the reflection is really about the application of, the integration of, the doing of, instead of actually just, always thinking about. Does that make sense? Other questions? I mean, if you disagree or if you don't understand, please feel free to say it. So good. So before we return to our teachings, any other questions about practice and life? Yes.
Fred, a couple weeks ago, you talked about mixing of paths. Paths, that's the best way to put it. So I've been thinking about that a little bit. Mm-hmm. Sorry about that. So I was brought up Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of a vague, scary, confusing, you know, kind of for a lot of people. Maybe if I'd been brought up Buddhist, it would have been vague and scary and confusing when I was little. But never meant much to me. And with Buddhism and the path, Christianity's come a lot from some degree.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas Buddhism is my path, I enjoy Christianity, I guess, now when I didn't before, or at least what it really means. So how does that work? I don't want to get all mixed up and get, you know, and read two great chapters like you were saying, or 16. Certainly, I don't want to get go any farther than that. But they seem to complement each other to me,
mm-hmm.
to some degree. And you know, the first book I read by Thich Nhat Hanh was Living Buddha, Living Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, how does that? I mean, maybe you can elaborate a little bit.
So the question, just for the recording, is several weeks ago I had talked about kind of being too eclectic in one's approach to spiritual transformation and, you know, being involved in too many things and reading, you know, and I think I compared it to, you know, rather than a book that has a beginning, a middle, and an end and has a coherency through all the chapters, it's like somebody just, you know, reads, you know, puts together a book that has 12 different chapters from 12 different novels. it can make good reading, interesting reading, but it doesn't have the coherency and the development of one novel. In the same way, I said, you know, most of these spiritual traditions have their own inner coherency, right? They have their own story. They have their own, they have their own philosophy. They have their own they have their own belief system. I mean, they have their own tradition and history. So there's a coherency in them, and that the practices, you know, so if you're in a more faith-based tradition, you find that a lot of the practice is around prayer. You know, it's my relationship to the deity, right? And my, because there is a deity, somebody higher than me, above me, and that I, and much of my spiritual life is about how I develop a relationship of some sort, and that traditionally, my understanding is prayer, and often ritualized prayer. Buddhism, as I, you know, as we said earlier, is a different kind of path. There is no deity in it, and so it is not a faith-based or belief-based, other than a belief that each of us has a Buddha nature, and that each of us has the capacity of living an awakened life. And so, because this process of awakening is something primarily that goes on in one's own mind, therefore the practice, as opposed to prayer, that is central, is meditation. Okay? And again, when you get to behaviors, leading a good life, or morality, conduct, you know, one finds also a lot of commonality among hopefully all the religious traditions. But often when you get deeper into the practices, they are different. Again, because Buddhism, as opposed to others, is based on an inner transformation and not based on outer confessions of faith, right? Or having to go through certain rituals or, you know, declarations or, you know what I mean, belief systems. Therefore, it is much more amenable, you know, for people who maybe have a different faith-based tradition or something, or a different deity, if there's no, you know, I mean, if the individual is willing to harmonize the two, they certainly can be in harmony. Because, I mean, you know, when in even the Buddha, 2,500 years ago, he developed his dharma. It wasn't called Buddhism. His dharma, his path, in the context of a society that had deities, that had gods, and that most people believed in them. So it was interesting that when people would try to question him, you know, does God exist, and is there, he wouldn't get into it. He wouldn't get into it at all. I mean, he basically said, I teach the cessation of suffering, you know, and this is my path. And he wouldn't be drawn into theological or religious types discussions at all, because he didn't think it was germane, and he probably knew what a minefield it was to get into that. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, and you know that in the great teachers of today, such as, I mean, the great meaning they are, their message is very widespread. They're sort of spokespeople for Buddhism in its transformation. They were probably thinking of people like Thich Nhat Hanh or the Dalai Lama. We know that their message is very clear, because they're coming to a culture that already has strong religious traditions. You know, the Judeo-Christian traditions and other religious traditions. And so their message is very clear. You know, there's no conflict. There's no conflict. And because Buddhism is an inner practice.